Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 151st edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. And during the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Zoe Saloul, who was born and raised in Beirut, Lebanon. From when she was 7 to 27 years old, Zoe came of age in a war zone. She and her husband then left Lebanon for Canada and later moved to the United States in 1996. They raised their three children in Falmouth, and Zoe brought with her a passion for education, safety for her family, and a resilience that defines her still today. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Zoe. It's such a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
When I was a kid growing up, I remember lots of images on TV of shelled out buildings in Beirut. And I can't imagine what life was like for you living year after year in a war zone. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what you would witness on a daily basis and how it changed you.
So, as you said, the war started, I was 7 years old, and it ended, I was 27 years old. And during this time, like, the war was from a little bit of things missing or a little bit of shooting, and then it changed to be severe on and off. And during this time, like, we were really struggling and trying to do whatever it takes to stay alive. And, you know, we, as a child, I remember myself going walking like a mile or two to go get water and then going 7 floors to go be able to fill up the bathtub where we can use it for a while. Or hiding on the stairs where, you know, will be no way that we can be harmed from glass if it breaks. However, also I remember like the long nights where there were a torture behind my parents' building, like a street behind, unfortunately. And we used to hear people being tortured, their screams. And unfortunately, second day, we see these bodies, you know, taken in the cars. And we were threatened not to look. And then as years goes by, you learn that, you know what, to stay alive, you need to put your head down and only take care of yourself. And definitely the people that you love, your family, your neighbors. But again, you learn, like for me, it was learning to cherish every minute that I stayed alive. Like I remember we used to hide between the apartments and we can hear the missiles leaving. And then we all stop breathing. And I can still remember that because you need to hear that whistle. So if you hear that whistle, this means, okay, your building is safe. And if you don't, then it means it's coming to you. So again, all of these fear, the, you know, like you're always in a battle with death. When it's going to be me, when it's going to be my parents or my brothers or my friends. And you learn to live and to survive. You learn to appreciate and to thank God for even a small piece of bread and for a candle that you can have and be able to read your book and to continue and to pretend that, you know, there is always hope, there is always a dream. And for me, like this is what made me today.
Mm. You were somehow able to retain images of beauty in a very dark and ugly time.
Yes, yeah. And you know, like, again, probably this comes back to the way we were raised. Like, you know, my mom used to let us, you know, see positive with every, even negative thing. So we always praised and thank God for everything that we had. And, you know, we always saw beauty in every human being, in everything around us. And this is why, like 20 years after, I said, you know what? I lost all of my childhood. I do not remember a lot of, you know, a long period of time where it was like always like happy time. It was like always, as I said, like this severe race, and you know, who's gonna win? Mm-hmm. Is it death or me?
Right. And so you weren't you did go to school. How did you manage school around all the war zone?
Yeah. So what happened is that they'll have like a period of time where the war is so, so severe. So we hide, we struggle to find food, to find water. We go underground for a week sometimes. And when it's safe, when they have ceasefire, lives goes on. So, you know, you learn to walk next to a burned building and to pretend it's not there. And you go, and again, life goes on. So they open schools. You go buy your books, you buy your stuff, and you go to school. And then when war starts again, you go and hide. And my mom was, even though she did not continue her education, she was so big to really pushes us that education is your best weapon. This is what's going to make you something in the future. And the first thing she'd make sure, pick up your books and take them with you when we're hiding so we can study while we're there. And this is how it worked. We continue, we finished school, and we went to college, and it was the 20 years of my life.
Wow. And what did you study in college?
In college, like, my dream was to be a doctor. And I had the acceptance to go to American University in Beirut. However, unfortunately, during the time I had my acceptance, it was governed by militant. So for me to be going to that university, I had to put on the uniform of that militant group. I had to carry their weapon and participate in many things.
There was obligatory service for you if you wanted to go to medical school.
Exactly.
First you do the military, then you can go to medical school.
Exactly. And for me, a person who did not believe in the cause of the war and who did not believe in the whole war and the whole fighting, it wasn't what they were talking about. I couldn't do it. So I waited a year. I was hoping that the government would take over. Unfortunately, this never happened. And so what I did, I changed my major and I did computer science. And this is what I did. I went to a different university, Lebanese American University, which is affiliated with New York University in Beirut.
Oh, so you ended up studying anyway, but just adjusting your dream for the time being.
Exactly.
That's an interesting thing that happens. Education for women is wide open in Beirut?
It is. It mm-hmm. is. You know, you can continue your education. So Lebanon is one of the countries that's more open-minded, more advanced. And even, as I said, when the ceasefire happens, you see people going, having parties in their home, restaurants trying to rebuild so they can do something.
Resume natural
exactly.
life.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you and your husband dreamed of a safe place to live and to work and to raise a family, and you moved to Ottawa, Canada, but then you found your way to Maine in time. How did you know when you arrived in Maine that it would be a good fit for you and your family and place to hatch some dreams?
Yeah. So for us, when we left our country, we said, you know what, no way that we're going to be having a family and be fearful for their life as we were for ours. So we immigrated to Canada, and we stayed for a year in Montreal first, and we moved to Ottawa. And in 1990, 1996, my husband had a job offer to come in as a consultant to United States, and we ended up in Maine as a consultant, and I joined him in 1997, November 1997. And I came, and like during the time that I was in Canada, I always had this feeling that I'm missing home. I always missed home. I always missed my parents, my sisters, my friends, and I never felt I belong. However, when I came here to Maine and I started interacting with people that I never met before, and I felt, you know what, like they're giving me the opportunity to get to know who I am for me as a human being without judging me if I'm Muslim, if I'm Arab, if I am, you know, whatever the other characteristics that I always felt when I was in Canada. And I started building some relationships, close relationships. And these people became my friend, and now they are my family, my new family that I count on. They're there for me when I need them. They're there for my kids. And this is what made me feel that Maine is home. Like even I recall when we first moved to our home in Falmouth, my husband was as a consultant. He was in Chicago at that time, and they closed around, after 9/11, they closed all the airports. So I was there with only two kids by myself. So I went to my mailbox, and there were like 20, 30 letters. And I look, I said, oh my gosh, who are these people? So I came home. And I started opening these letters, and they were from my neighbors. Neighbors that I never met. People that they left their numbers, their home numbers, saying, if you need anything, please call us. And I've been in the same house since 2001. And I'm so proud to be able to have that opportunity to be in Maine and to be part of my friends' families and be part of mine.
And clearly your community appreciates the gifts you bring as well, for them to write letters like that to you.
Yes, and this is what they made me feel. Mm. And so it's really a special feeling to feel that you are welcomed, you are part of the community, and this is when you feel, you know what, it's my time now to give back. It's not only for me to work and take what I'm being paid. It's time for me to contribute and be a good citizen. I need to show the best I have and help others and do more to the community.
And you do a lot of that. And we're going to talk about that in the second half of the show. I just wanted to say, I think it's quite beautiful what you were telling me about how your children have opportunities to do things you didn't have opportunities to do during a war. For instance, your daughter dances.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you could say a little bit more about what it's like to see your kids get to do the things you weren't able to do.
Yeah, so one of my dreams was, you know, to be able to dance, or, you know, so I remember myself watching TV, let's say, dancers dancing ballet or doing gymnastic during the Olympics or whatever. And I used to sit down and my mom will come and see that I had this, or I wish I'm one like the one dancing in front of me. And she say, you know what, one day the war is going to stop. It's not going to be long and we're going to be able to do this. However, unfortunately, you know, the war took too long, 20 years. So now seeing my daughter, watching her, you know, even her class, you know, I go to every class time she had there and I watch her dancing, and she's now on point, and every turn she does, every jump she does, like I feel my heart jumping, mm-hmm. like seeing she's fulfilling some things that I dreamed of when I was little. And they can have that here in America, in the United States. I couldn't. Like, for example, my kids, also my older son, grew up and they always said, You know, I always talked about this pain in my heart. I wish I was able to be a doctor, but I couldn't. So now, and he's fulfilling his dream, but also it's part because he wanted to, for me to see that.
Because your eldest son is in medical school?
Yes.
Yeah.
So now he's starting his med school, and I'm so proud. And again, like to be able to see him fulfilling his dream and not to have any obstacles. And only because he can study, he can be himself, he can apply to the college and be accepted without any other conditions for him or barriers to overcome.
I'm sure you're very proud.
And I'm so proud.
It must be a delightful journey to witness and to get to feel your way through that with him. If you are just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Zoe Zahluil. She has a social activist's resume. Zoe sits on the board of the Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project and MANA, and is a new board president of the Maine Immigrants' Rights Coalition. She's a parent leader in the Portland Empower program, but she's here today to discuss her role as the New England Arab American Association's director. Zoe, tell us what made you want to start NEAAO as a 501c3 organization for Arabic-speaking people in Maine and New England.
Yeah. So thank you again for giving me the opportunity to talk about the organization. So New England Arab American Organization. The reason why we started this organization, and again, like a big thank you to my professor here at USM, who really made me and give me the belief that not to underestimate the power of one.
Who is this?
This is Paula, and I really apologize for not able to spell her.
Good old Paula.
I call her Paula G, so I'm sorry. So she is, one of my professors. I'm doing my master's here at USM in social work. Again, what happened is that in 2010, I lost my father to a long battle with cancer. So I went back home for 5 weeks. And by going back home, I stayed with my family again, with my sister. And it was so hard for me to come back. And for me, I felt, you know what? Like life is too short. No one knows when it's going to be, or for me, let's say, I don't know when it's going to be me. So I want to leave some things that people remembers me, other than being a person behind a computer somewhere. I want to do something with people. So I started doing interpreting, and I became a qualified interpreter after taking some training. And after that, I took some training to become a culture broker. And I started interpreting to newcomers, and we had a big wave of people coming from Sudan, from Iraq, and I started interpreting for different families, different members. And this gave me opportunity to really see that there is common struggle with these families, where they have struggles to find, to meet their essential needs. There is a struggle to know the resources, struggles at school, struggles with isolation, not knowing the language, and so on. So I felt, you know what? What I learned is not enough. I need more. So this is when I started my master's degree at USM. And this gave me some tools to start collecting these data and knowing, okay, here is what I need to do. And one day, I was involved in a domestic violence case where, again, for, you know, a person who was a victim of domestic violence, unfortunately, for something that she did not have any saying in, only because she's pregnant with another girl, she was a victim. So for me, this really moved me. And it put me in a position where, again, going back to the war, and not only like fighting and racing with death, but now, okay, I'm a woman too, and I am a big advocate for women. So I went to class, and this is when Paula said, and I shared without mentioning names, I shared this experience. And she said, Zoe, do not underestimate the power of one. You can start your dream as open having an organization.
You bring your experience of turning something ugly into something beautiful again.
Yes. So and this is what I did. I thought, okay, how can we turn this into a positive? Not the being a victim, but what can we do with
to prevent this kind of thing?
Exactly. Yeah. And what we did is that we started a nonprofit organization, and my husband and I. And now we have 200 participants that are in the organization. And what we do, we offer different programs to attack different of these issues that we found during our visits. And what we do, our programs, is really an answer to what the community needs. So we know, for example, they are isolated. So we have a lot of programs to help out women get out of isolation, to have her have fun, and knowing that she is empowered and she has people that she can count on, and resources to know what's her right and how can I get my right, and so on. Same thing, we help out kids. And what we do is that we felt that part of the grief that the kids go through is that, you know, they grieve. So they grieve their school, they grieve, you know, losing their language, not being able to have same friends, their family. And what happened is that, again, for them to fit in, they try to stop speaking the language, thinking that, okay, this is going to make me fit in more. And what happened now, like a mother who does not know the language, now not only she does not know how to speak outside of home, but even inside with her kids.
It must be terribly isolating for the women who are home with young children. They don't have work. They don't have the ability to go into the schools, and their children aren't even speaking Arabic to them.
Exactly. And this is why we felt, you know what, like, how can we help to prevent this isolation to become even bigger? Mm-hmm. So what we did, we started last year our Arabic classes, where it's open for everyone, not only for Arabic speakers. It's free classes to learn Arabic for kids from 6 years old to 16 years old, where they can come. We have different levels. And they can learn how to read and write. And we speak all the time in Arabic to them. And this is going to bring back the family. They're going to bring back the language, where they can keep that connection with their parents, grandparents, talk to their extended family back home, and be able to feel that we still have that in us, this culture, this community.
That's really generous, because it's all free, isn't it?
It is free.
And so if people are listening and they're interested in participating with offerings through NEAAO, or if they're interested in donating or finding more out about you, can you tell us a little bit how people might find you?
Yeah, like we have, they can connect to us like through our website, neao.org, or they can call my cell phone number, which is also available online or on the Facebook of the organization. And we welcome, you know, like even a person who would like to get to know their neighbors more, we welcome that.
And you are located at 24 Preble Street, is that right?
Yes. So
this is a special new location where I just got to go for the first time this week, but it will not be my last time. Can you tell us just a little bit about the Welcome Center that's opened up?
Yes. So again, thanks to generosity of many organization, and mainly to Broadreach, the center opened up. And it was a dream for many. before that. So it's a center that has multiple nonprofit organizations, all from immigrant communities. And we all work together. We can share resources. We can share ideas. And also it's the main office for Maine Immigrants' Rights Coalition, where also the advocacy for and the voice for immigrants is located there at the same center. So it's a wonderful space. We have wonderful conference rooms. It's decorated beautifully. All brand new. Everything is beautiful. You go in and you see, you know what? It's not only a dream. That's now reality, and we want to continue to go forward. And we thank, again, everyone who was part of it.
I think it's a very hopeful space. It's a shared workspace and a collaborative, really beautiful, all things possible kind of space.
It is.
And congratulations.
Thank you. And our first location, and we're still there, it's in Westbrook at the Westbrook Community Center. And I want to thank the city of Westbrook, that are also so generous by giving us also an in-kind space there for the second year. So we really thank them for that.
Oh, great. I'm glad you got that in. Zoe, you are so warm and kind, and we're somehow able to stay open and loving in a harsh, formative environment. Your resilience is not only a beacon to newer arrivals, but you have helped to create an open and loving community that eases the difficult transition to a new country for so many others. I'm excited by your work, and thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com and check out more related information at facebook.com/newmainerspeak. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Zoe has selected for us. Could you briefly introduce this song as we wrap things up, Zoe?
Yeah, like this song talks about Beirut, and it's sang by Fairuz, who's the ambassador of Lebanon for many years. And it talks about how the city of glory, unfortunately, like became ashes. But however, it came back again. I hope I was able to also show how I think it's something in Lebanon where we always rise up again. So
that's beautiful. You have a lot in common with Fairuz, and here she is.
للبحر والبيوت لصخرة كأنها وجه بحار قديم هي من روح الشعب خمر هي من Thank you.
Mm-hmm.